Hello and welcome to another edition of the Tigers Down Under. I'm your host, Alex, and with me I have Dan. How are you, Dan?
Look, I'm all right. I'm a little bit frustrated. I got out of bed this morning to try and watch the replay and couldn't be found. So, and then couldn't even get the audio stream working because the club was having some technical difficulties. So, I think I'd end up, one of the links you posted, I was listening to that, I was stuck with Brum commentary and it was not enjoyable.
I think the club seems to have assumed that the clocks have already changed because they've started posting that, you know, where in the world will you be watching City? And they've been saying that it's 4:45 in Sydney for these morning games. Thankfully, it wasn't 4:45 because if I'd gotten up at 4:45 to no stream, I'd have been a bit more perplexed or a bit more annoyed than we were, you know, as it was only 6:45. But yeah, it was a bit of a weird one because Paramount down here, I thought, had every game. And I suppose it shows, you know, we don't have many replays or haven't had many replays in recent years that we haven't experienced, you know, what the situation is in terms of television coverage. But it's not a Paramount issue because it looked like, yeah, as you said, there was no streams anywhere. I think I saw people all over Twitter sort of just saying that they couldn't get a stream, they couldn't get radio coverage or anything. It's 2024. We should be able to watch all the games. But we haven't even seen highlights for that one. So going to be an interesting discussion of that one in a little bit. But look, we'll start with the Norwich game. And, you know, you sort of said before we went on air, it's a bit sort of same old story with that game. Didn't take our chances, looked reasonably dominant in patches. Kind of fell behind to a goal, arguably against the run of play just before halftime. You know, you could argue as well, there's a reasonable amount of ref interference in the result. But at the end of the day, as we've said many times before, if you don't finish your own chances, you can't really blame anyone but yourself. Scored a great consolation goal through Morton, but all in all, not a great performance.
Yeah, it was frustrating. And very strange one, because I think, you know, there were large portions of that game where we really did dominate. And I think for the last, felt like the last 30 minutes, we were just camped on their 18-yard box, apart from the one foray forward, which they managed to put away. But that is, I think, it's one of those, it is becoming a bit of a trend where, you know, talking about, you know, switching off for key moments, it seems to almost be, you know, if when we are so dominant and we aren't converting chances, that, you know, almost inevitably, if the opposition goes on a counter, it is very, very worrying because it almost seems like other teams only need one chance and they'll score against us, whereas we need to take 20 shots to get one in the net. So it's frustrating on that ground. Certainly, I think, like, the ref, some of the decisions that were made were just wrong. And I admittedly slept in a little bit for this one, and I missed the first, I think, 20 minutes or something. And so I came on and Connolly had already been subbed off, and I was going, what's going on? So I missed seeing him get cleaned up, but I did see the elbow or the swinging arm that clipped Louis Cornwell.
What I don't get about that one is he's given a yellow card, which means he's seen that it's a foul. Mm. And it's just the sort of thing where I'm like, if you've seen it, it's a red. Like, there's no sort of middle ground in my mind. I'm like, either it's a red card or you don't see it and it's not a foul sort of thing. Like, in what world is a swinging elbow that hits Coyle in the face, and I think actually sort of raised a lump on his face pretty quickly, so you could see the contact. How is a swinging elbow not a red?
Yeah, I don't know is the short answer. You're absolutely right. In some of the things that have been given as red cards, just purely because of contact with the head, across, you know, all the leagues that I'm, you know, watching, some in the, you know, in Championship and Premier League and different things. But even in the A-League, you know, the Mariners had Angel Torres sent off earlier this season, where he, you know, just like it was a brush across this bloke's face, but there was like, you know, there was anger and intent in the player. He didn't actually strike him very hard, but there was some contact with the head, so it got sent. And you go, okay, obviously different leagues and stuff, but if you go, okay, well, if they're, you know, if the standard is like that, or that's the interpretation of the rules of the game, then surely, you know, a player who, you know, after you've seen, like, especially like, you know, that's 30 or 40 minutes into the game where it's just been a consistent stream of fouls by Norwich. That you go, you know, like the yellows aren't doing enough. The yellows were not, you know, I mean, one, it was so long for him to really pull the yellows out and, you know, punish Norwich in that regard. But they clearly weren't effective enough in controlling, you know, Norwich's actions. And I think, you know, not that, you know, a red card should be a way of pulling a team into line, but also, like, they were getting away with so much, and that was so blatantly just violent and dangerous. And, you know, like, it's a red card any day of the week and twice on Sunday. Like, it.
I think that's it. I think it's the fact that it's not like it was out of the blue. It's not like it was, you know, a one-off incident in the game. It's the sort of thing that I look at, and in park football, you look at it and you go, that's where a ref can lose control of a game, because if you're not actually stepping in and stopping that sort of play, players can actually get quite frustrated and escalate things. And at a professional level, that doesn't necessarily happen, and it didn't in this case. But as you say, I mean, it was just foul after foul after foul from Norwich. The amount of yellow cards being dished out alone suggested that there was a red card coming, but it seemed as if the ref just didn't want to make that decision, didn't want to have to, you know, quote unquote, fill out the paperwork, as, you know, you get at park football. But
I wonder if it's like, this is revenge for us appealing Tyler Morton's red card. They've said, well, if we're going to have our decisions challenged, well, then we just won't make them.
And that's sort of the frustration, is we've been almost undone 2 weeks in a row by red cards, one that was given incorrectly to us and one that wasn't, that should have been given. But look, as I sort of started by saying, we didn't put chances away. You know, some of that is a credit to Angus Gunn, who, you know, as another discussion, could have also been off the pitch. But two great saves off Billy Sharp shots, which was a positive lining, I thought, to the game, because, you know, Sharp having to play 70 or so minutes in place of Connolly, who admittedly himself had said he didn't think he had the fitness to start a championship match, and effectively did in this case, and still managed to produce good chances late in the game. Slater, I think, had a shot that was really well saved as well. So we had good chances, but we sort of, as we said in the chat, it feels like every week keepers are having blinders against us. It's hard to criticise the players too much when they're not missing open goals, you know, as we were doing earlier in the season. They're having great chances, but at the same time, you know, something's got to change. I think Rossini said after the Birmingham game, that was going to be the last game that we get unlucky. And I'm like, don't know how you can decide that your luck's going to change like that, but it's a frustrating one. I think the only clear chance that we really should have scored from was Carvalho's sort of halfway between a shot and a cross for Sharp, where I can see what he's trying to do. Like, if he finds that bottom corner, it's a goal. He's got plenty of space to aim for. But at the same time, Sharp's right there for a tap-in, and all he has to do is pull it across the box. And I think he, in the end, kind of gets caught in two minds about which way he should be going with it.
Yeah, I think that was probably one of the real positives was Carvalho's debut. I thought he was, for a player who's, you know, arrived at the club only a couple of days before, you know, thrust straight into the fray, to be as involved and, you know, at times dominant. Like, he was certainly a player that was copping quite a few fouls from the Norwich. They didn't really know how to handle him. You know, some of his footwork and his skill and technique was a joy to watch. I think that was a real positive, him. And I think the other one was Matty Jacob, who I was, after that first Birmingham Cup, I said he should start against Norwich. start in the next game, and he did. And I think even there's an indication, because he didn't play this morning, that he, you know, he's going to hold that position again for the game in Sunderland. So I think, you know, it's good to see, you know, those young players we talk about, you know, when there's opportunities there, that, you know, that it's up to some of these young players or these fringe players to stake a claim. And you go, you know, we've talked about how disappointing it is, you know, a guy like Laquilo has had chance after chance after chance and never really, you know, grabbed it with both hands. And Matty Jacob had one cup game and went, I'll be your left back. You know, he may not play the last, you know, 20 games of the season, but he's made a claim and he's had a couple of good, you know, decent games. And I think, you know, he's only going to get better. So I thought, you know, probably those were two, I think, main positives. But just generally, yeah, we creating lots, dominating lots, but just frustrating. I think the main comment has been like, surely with the first goal, with Rowe running through half our team, that's where somebody just grabs him by the shirt and just cops the yellow and moves on. You know, it was silly how many players he was able to run past to get that shot away.
We feel like the vibe I get from our team is that we're the kid at school who gets picked on, and then when he turns around and retaliates, the teacher turns around and sees them and punishes the retaliator, because it feels as if we're trying to be the good guys and not foul teams and not play dirty and not do anything. But then the minute we do it wasn't even that dirty, but the minute we do with Morton against Wednesday, it's a red card. You know, Norwich swing elbows at us. They, you know, take us down at every opportunity. They waste time. It's just a couple of yellows here or there. But, you know, if we do something, it seems as if it gets punished. So it's a really tough one to take. The only other point that I had on this one, which we sort of talked about last week in the chat, and then I think there's actually an article in the HDM about it, is the quality of the pitch at the moment. I think the positive on that side is that after that Norwich game, Sunderland's away, then we've got the week off, and then I think it's Millwall at home. It would be Millwall at home. So there's a couple of weeks for the pitch to recover from, you know, pretty poor weather over there. But it must be a concern, and Rossini is speaking about it as a concern, when the side is playing such a possession-heavy game, and I can only imagine for someone like Carvalho coming in, used to the, you know, pristine carpet at Liverpool or you know, Leipzig, it's even more of a credit to him that he still looks so dominant and so, you know, brilliant on the ball on such an uneven surface. My concern is that we've got the rugby league starting up again pretty soon after the Millwall game, I think. So I don't know if the pitch is really going to hold up all that well. And you sort of have to think, with the amount of money being invested in the squad, and we've said it before, but you look at all the off-field stuff, you look at, you know, the training ground, you look at the pitch, you look at those sorts of things, there's probably an argument to be made that some of the money should be being redirected to those areas, and that you almost see just as much benefit for the team doing improvements there.
Yeah, I think certainly there is a need to revitalize the surface at the MKM. I almost called it KCOM. And I think, you know, there's a lot of things that Ajun and Tan and the team are getting right, and they're doing really good stuff. And I'm sure they're onto it. I'm sure they're like thinking about it. I'm sure it's part of their plans. But I think probably one of the next big jobs needs to be to get the pitch sorted out somehow, because as you said, like, it's the fact that we're still sharing it with a rugby league team and things is, you know, bordering on ridiculous, but I suppose it is what it is. We just have to make do. But yes, it does certainly make it difficult to play the kind of football that we want to play when the pitch is in such terrible condition.
Well, did you want to give me your votes, and then we'll do our best to talk about this Birmingham game?
Yeah. So I hadn't even really thought about it until, and then I looked at yours. So I'm trying not to just like copy. But I guess I mentioned Carvalho. I'll give him the three. I'll give two to Morton for his one to strike, and I'll give Matty Jacob the one for you know, a league debut.
Good shouts. Yeah, I went Morton for the three. I thought he had a pretty decent game, and he obviously capped it off with the goal, which was great. Bit of a Liverpool connection between him and Carvalho, who got my two votes. I thought from, you know, the first minute of the game, he was demanding the ball. He was getting the ball. You know, his low center of gravity, his ability to kind of twist out of challenges and, you know, or draw contact and draw fouls and sort of get us up the pitch. His sort of football smarts really came to the fore. You know, for someone, as you said, who's been at the club for, I don't know, maybe less than a week, hasn't really been starting a football match yet this season, or maybe only a handful of games, to last the 90 minutes essentially and have that assist right at the end as well, was really promising to see. And then I went the one vote for Twine, who, you know, we'll talk about in a little bit, as now a former City player. It's a bit of a shame because I actually thought he and Carvalho were linking up really well in those forward areas. I think I sort of touched on it last week with Logan that they're both that sort of, you know, primarily number 10, but can be pushed wide player. I think Carvalho more effectively than Twine, but meant that they could probably intertwine, so to speak, quite effectively in those forward areas, which is what came to be against Norwich. So I gave him the one vote, even though, yeah, he is now a former City player. It's probably the first time that's actually happened, but there you go. We'll try and do our best now. We'll just do a brief roundup of the Birmingham game this morning, having obviously not seen it, not even having seen highlights, not even really knowing what the formation that we played was, because there was a few different sources suggesting that it was a, you know, 4-3-3 with, I think it was, the suggestion was that Vaughan and Furlong were playing as fullbacks and Ashby was in midfield. Other places suggesting it was a back three of Ashby, McLaughlin and Smith. Then you've also got, you know, so it was Ingram, Ashby, McLaughlin, Smith, Furlong, Vaughan, Doherty, Okilo, Ali, who actually, you know, we thought was going out on loan, but not sure what's happening there now. And then Sharp and Sellers Fleming up top. You know, it was an entirely changed side from the Norwich game. Clearly, as you alluded to with Jacob not starting, it seems as if Rosie probably just went, everyone that I expect to start against Sunderland, let's wrap in cotton wool. Interesting that Sharp started because it maybe suggests that Connolly will be okay for Sunderland. Or maybe it was just a case of Sharp just needs to get minutes in the legs and see how he goes with that. But you sort of talked before about Jacob taking his chance and Lekilo not. Lekilo managed to open the scoring on this occasion with Furlong, sort of that the mystery forgotten left back, providing the assist. So, I mean, look, that can only be a good thing to see, I suppose.
Yeah, I think, I just about ran out of patience with Lekilo, I think, after maybe the Norwich game. And I said, I'm done. I can't defend him any longer. I'm not going to, but I do think that I think like the fact that it just seemed to go so long without being able to contribute, get a goal or an assist or anything, I think certainly was obviously has to play on his mind a little bit. You know, he's the only one of the regular forwards who, you know, has no league goals so far, where, you know, you look, it's Philogene's on what, 5 or 6, and Tufan's on 7, and Delap's on 7, and Connolly's on 8, and Twine was on 4 or 5. So, you know, he's kind of the only one who's not really contributing in any sort of consistent way. So it was good for him to get that. Hopefully that, you know, that is a little bit of a confidence boost for him, and, you know, we see him unleash a little bit, because he certainly seemed to, when we first saw him, he seemed like he didn't really have the confidence, and then he got to a point and he seemed to have got that, and he was willing to take on his man, and then I think he got injured and he's was out, been sort of in and out, but this last probably months worth of games where he's been coming on, he just hasn't really ever looked like he wants to try and take his man on and, you know, try and get, you know, to the byline, cut across or anything. He sort of stands him up, turns around, plays it back, someone else whips the cross in. He's not really been doing a lot. So I'm not trying to trash him. I'm trying to say it's good that he got a goal. But yeah, so I think that was good. I mean, it was, yeah, Ali's an interesting one. Wonder exactly what that all is, whether that's that his loan deal fell through, or whether that's, you know, they got word that, you know, Burnley, you know, basically said, hey, we're, you know, someone else is interested in Twine, so we might, you know, take him back or whatever, and they've pulled the pin on the Ali deal just to keep another forward around, or maybe it's because Connolly got cleaned up. They've decided, you know, maybe we can't risk sending out a forward. We need to keep someone else around. But it seems like he's sort of maybe he's still here for the moment anyway. But who knows? I think obviously with Twine going, it's another loan spot that's available for someone else to come in. I'm assuming because there's talk about someone coming, someone pretty close but not ready for Sunderland. And then we've still got the rest of January to try and, you know, fill in the other holes in the squad. Yeah, it was, I think, probably a notable debut for young Dan Ashby. I didn't realize he was so that he was only 17, which is crazy to have. I think from, I mean, again, we don't really know. We haven't seen highlights, haven't seen nothing. But from all accounts, he had a really solid game and didn't look out of place. So, which is, yeah, good for the future, good for the future of us, for our club. So hopefully he can stay around and make a legend of himself as well.
Yeah, I saw, because I think we'll talk Sunderland game later on, Jacob Graves will be equaling his dad for league starts for City with 151 league starts. And I think I saw that that was by far the most father-son combined appearances for the club, because I think the next best is a father-son combination where the son didn't actually make a senior appearance, but the appearances were all from the father. So, you know, yeah, if Stan Ashby can follow in Ian's footsteps, and I don't actually know how many games Ashby played for us off the top of my head, it must be 200 or so, I would have thought at least. Yeah, that'd be a great contribution from him as well. And yeah, I think it was at Sellers Fleming also got his first start for the club. Smith into the lineup as well. Furlong, ooh, obviously. As well.
From the commentary or like the text commentary and stuff that I was reading, seemed to have got to get a few shots away and create a few good opportunities, Sellers Fleming. So seemed like, again, like the all the young blokes really kind of like stood up to try and grab, take their chance and relish the opportunity to play, you know, against. I mean, obviously, Birmingham, I think, set out a bit of a weaker side to start as well. They made a lot of changes at halftime or just after halftime in their forward line to really come and take the game to us, which I think sort of challenged us a little bit. And you sort of, in different circumstances, without the huge injury list that we have suddenly accrued, I reckon, you know, Rosinha probably mirrors that and does something almost exactly the same and says, well, you're bringing out the big guns, here's our big guns, we want to win this. But I think even though he said only a short week ago about, or 2 weeks ago about, you know, the FA Cup and how valuable a cup run was and how much he wanted his players to experience that, I think the reality of the situation now is very, very different to then. And he kind of just went, we'll just see what happens. You know, we're 1-0 up, we'll hopefully we can hold on or you know, nab a second or something. But I don't think he was willing to risk too many of those players when obviously we got a huge game against Sunderland a couple of days time.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, Tufan and Morden did come on, but yeah, that was at 80 minutes. So, and Slater a bit before that. But yeah, I almost wonder if that was more a case of it was 1-1 and you go, geez, we don't want extra time. Let's just get a result one way or another. And yeah, sure enough, Miyoshi pops up in the 93rd minute. 243 appearances was Ian Ashby. So if Stan can get, you know, 50 or 60 under his belt, he can just about equal the Greaveses at this point in time. All right, well, we'll talk quickly on off-field news and then we'll preview Sunderland to round things off. Obviously, the main news being that Twine has been recalled to Burnley and sent out to Bristol City on loan. So I thought this would be a good time to do our player review of Scott Twine since he's no longer at the club and reflect on that loan spell. You know, you touched on before the 4 goals, 3 assists in his 25 league appearances. Is an interesting one because those goals came so close together from, I think, December onwards. It feels like if those 4 goals have been spread out over the 25 games, like if he'd scored near the start of the season and then, you know, got a couple in December and then got one this, it'd feel a much better spell than it does, which is where it feels like he took a long time to get going, missing a lot of free kicks, set pieces not great, looking quite you know, overwhelmed at times with decision making. you know, and granted, you look at, you know, one of his goals is a tap in against Rotherham. So it's kind of like, how much do you value? And, you know, one was a penalty. How much do you value some of the goals? But it wasn't the worst loan spells. I mean, we were talking before, since, you know, the winger linked to us at the moment potentially is Rakitić from Palace. He sort of draws up memories of Malcolm Ebioe last season. Mm. We've certainly had worse loan spells than Scott Twine. It's a bit of a weird one. It's just one that, you know, it wasn't brilliant. It wasn't terrible.
Yeah, I think probably what disappointed me a little bit about Scott Twine, apart from the unceremonious exit, which is obviously outside of his control, you know, when Burnley says, no, you're coming back, and then they've made another deal, that's beyond his control, but that is still frustrating. But I think just the amount of hype, you know, how hard we chased him for 12 months, you know, we wanted him when he left MK Dons and he snubbed us and went to Burnley, and then we finally got him, and then he was just okay. I think that's really what, like, I think he was building. He seemed like he was growing into the season, but obviously that's a long time. You know, it took 20 odd games to sort of grow into it, which is a bit frustrating. But he was just started to feel like he was, you know, getting some reward to go with the effort. Because I think it'd be hard to argue that he wasn't, you know, he wasn't contributing in terms of effort and movement off the ball and pressing and those sorts of things. But yeah, goal contributions were certainly lacking for large chunks of the season. And certainly, you know, he came with this reputation for his set pieces and very underwhelming. I think it was very early in the season and we go, oh, free kick, yes, we're going to see Twine go. And then after about, you know, a few games, it was like, oh, fuck, free kick, is Twine going to put it over the bar? So, yeah, like, I think I am probably a little disappointed that he did leave. I think, you know, had we been able to keep him for the season, I think we could have got some more out of him. But I think, you know, as you say, you know, that one brief sort of, you know, game lined up or, you know, working with Carvalho, you know, seemed to you know, be working, you know, seemed like a nice combination that could grow and develop. Which I think when we said, you know, Carvalho coming in, we said we just need him to make some really good combinations with someone, and, you know, that'll be the thing that'll help him spur on. But yeah, I think it's a shame that he didn't get that opportunity. But we've still got to play. Do we have to play? We've got to play.
No, thankfully, thankfully, we've done the double with him. It'd be written in the stars for him to score against us. Yeah. And I was actually going to say,
a free kick too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I was going to say the interesting thing is, of course, he's linking up with his former manager from MK Dons. So you have to think that he'll play Twine to his strengths, perhaps more than we did. Mm. So you almost have to be prepared for him scoring 6-7 goals second half of the season, and everyone going, bloody hell, you know, where was this for us? And what were we doing with him? I'm like, there is something to be said. You look at Connolly with Rossini as a perfect example, where Connolly's been pretty awful everywhere else he's gone, and then, you know, has his best patch of his career with us, where Rossini knows the best, you know, how to get the best out of him. Mm. That sometimes managers and players just have a strong relationship and an understanding of what works. So I'm fully prepared for him to have a really successful stint at Bristol City, probably sign for them permanently in the summer, and us to sort of feel a bit frustrated that we didn't see the best of him. But, you know, you sort of said it before, it does open up a loan spot. I think Carvalho is almost already the replacement for Twine in that role. So I think that's a massive upgrade in that role. It's now just about using that loan spot and the funds freed up to try and get a winger in. It sounds like there's a winger who's pretty close, might not be in time for Friday, but hopefully is done sort of over the weekend, early next week. Mm. Panda coming in on a permanent deal. Apparently we're just waiting on the work permit for that one as well. So there's a bit of business happening. I think, you know, this is always that time in the window where a player or two leave, haven't done a whole lot of business yet, and people start to get a little bit twitchy about what's going on. But it's very much, you know, we're literally halfway through the window. you have to judge it at the end of it and see where we land in terms of business done before we get too stressed out about, you know, the timing of players leaving or coming in.
Mm. And I think, as you know, we play Sunderland and then, you know, we've got a week off for FA Cup. So there's, you know, a couple of weeks or whatever the fixture list looks like. It might be 10 days or something between, you know, games. There's plenty of time for new players to train, plenty of time for deals to be done, for players to come in and go out and all sorts of things. So I think it's just that injury thing. We just look suddenly seem like we're in a much worse position because of a couple of unfortunate injuries, you know, in the forwards. We obviously Delap's long-term knee injury, and then obviously Connolly getting cleaned up and him, you know, concussion protocols and not being, who even knows whether he's actually going to play against Sunderland or not. It seems like it's, they're not even sure themselves yet. It seems
I would think that he's more chance than not to start only because otherwise I'd be surprised that Sharp would have played as much as he did this morning. But again, yeah, who knows? But it's funny because, as you say, I mean, like, Philogene should be back for the Millwall game, at least off the bench, you'd hope. And then you think, if by then we've also got another winger in, we've got a keeper in, hopefully potentially a left back in as well, you suddenly look at the side as actually being quite strong. And by Millwall, I don't know the timings on it. I don't know if we'd have some, you know, Seri and Traore back potentially as well. All of a sudden, you look a whole lot stronger. It's really, you know, as I say, I mean, it's just getting a couple of those signings over the line, which is, it's sort of a weird position to be in because you're like, yes, we do look really weak at the moment, but two of those players are off in AFCON. They'll be back soon. Philogene's back in a fortnight, you know, goalkeeper coming in. It's, you know, it's just like a really sort of weird period where it's almost like you don't want to be saying, and maybe it's a good time to talk Sunderland now as well, but you know, you're not sort of dismissing the Sunderland game, but it almost just feels like a game where you're like, well, the timing's just not working out for when those players are coming in. We'll just have to deal with what we've got available and see how we go.
Yeah, I think it's easy to forget because I keep forgetting about like AFCON, like completely. It's just not really, I mean, partly because we've got Asian Cup, you know, going on in, you know, for our Socceroos down here. So I'm like being paying attention to that, but I keep forgetting that AFCON's on. I also forget that we have current internationals because it feels like it's been a while, like since they've been involved in a way that's actually like impacted us. Because obviously, you know, most of the time we've got your international breaks and, you know, they go away and they come back. But Asian Cup, AFCON, all those things, they just happen to be in the middle of stuff. So Traore scored a goal, I think, over there.
I thought that was a different Traore because I feel like there's a lot of Traores who play for Mali. Let me double check that.
Possibly. I don't know. Somebody said probably Mitch or Mike. They've probably done me a...
let's have a look. But Africa, Mali.
Anywho.
No, it's Hamari Traore.
Oh, there you go.
And then you had Boubacar Traore come off the bench, and I'm pretty sure our Traore didn't make it off the bench.
Yeah, right.
He came off the bench. But yes, there's a lot of Traores.
Too many Traores. I don't even know. I guess they're winning, so they might make it out of their group stages. But if they don't, they'll come home a little bit earlier than everyone else.
And if they're not coming off the bench as well, it means that they're hopefully nice and rested.
Well, yeah, and I think... either way, I mean, if they go deep in and they, you know, are part of a squad that gets to the final or wins the AFCON, you know, the Cup of Nations or whatever, well, then they're going to come back, you know, happy and full of confidence and everything, even if they probably don't play that much. To be a part of that, be included in that would be amazing. So I think it'd be good for them. I think probably the biggest thing in general is just how much we're missing Seri, which obviously we've talked about it before this one, but yeah, just that's been massive. But I think overall we're fine. We're just in, yeah, as you say, just a really awkward couple of days of awkward week sort of thing of the window where, you know, some players away, some injuries and, you know, comings and goings, and it's all sort of not quite falling in the way that would work for us. It's sort of falling against us a little bit, but it's just timing, so it is what it is.
Oh, yeah, Sunderland are an interesting team to play at this time because there's a bit of unrest up there with Mick Beale. They lost to Ipswich last weekend, which, you know, in isolation isn't something to be ashamed of at the moment, the way Ipswich are going. Having said that, Ipswich, I think, didn't have a win in the last four games, so there was perhaps a perception that they could get something out of that game. There was the fiasco with the Newcastle banners and slogans and everything else at the Stadium of Light when they played them in the FA Cup. So I think there was a bit of scepticism about Beale to begin with, and I don't think that's helped things. I think I saw West Ham or somebody linked with Jack Clark as well, which would be fantastic if he was bought before we played them, because I think before the last time we played them, we spoke about the fact that Clark is their main threat and someone you need to shut down. And then, of course, Coyle does a great job on him, goes off with an injury just out of necessity. And of course, Clark pops up and scores. So I think it's very much the same situation here. Need to shut down Clark. Their side outside of that doesn't offer a whole lot, I don't think. One positive I'm sort of gripping to is the fact that the Stadium of Light is quite a nice stadium, so the grass is the turf is probably a lot better for us as well. Going away from home might give us a chance to do a bit of a reset. And, you know, even a point out of this one I'd be reasonably happy with. I think take the point, go into that two-week period of, you know, sort of resting, recovering the players that we have, adding to the squad a bit, and then see how we go. I mean, we've got a great run of games starting with Millwall. I think there's four games in a row that are all very winnable. So I think it's just getting through this game without losing too much ground on the top six.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because, like, this has been a really short double. We didn't play Sunderland that long ago. So it'd be interesting. I think, yeah, if we can, shut down Clark. And I guess the other thing that probably works in our favour a little bit with that is that Christie's out injured with the hamstring or whatever, so he's not going to come off the bench and in right back for Coyle. So Coyle can just 90 minutes of marking Clark out of the game. That'll be good. I'm looking forward to it. It's a weird, challenging sort of situation where we were comfortably in the six and trying to sort of be a part of a pack that was breaking away. What are we, one win in the last seven games or something, which is, I think, across all competitions, so it's not. But where we've sort of fallen outside the six and into the pack, into the chasing pack. So it's a big game, but also, you know, it's not going to condemn us to relegation or anything, you know, as some of the crazy bloody forum dwellers would like to have us all believe that another loss is, you know, the final nail in the coffin for Rosinha and Azun and everyone, and we're all just going to tumble down the ladder to the, you know, into the 24th and go down to League One again. That's not going to happen. I think, you know, It'll be a good game. I think it'll be a good challenge. You're right. If we can get something out of this, get a point out of this, that's going to be a really good, ship steadying point potentially. Have a bit of a break, have a reset, probably even give everyone just a few days off and say, go do something fun, clear your mind, and we'll come back in a couple of days and get stuck into it. Because I don't necessarily think that after such a busy window and with Christmas and everything, that just like busting their asses for 2 weeks straight is necessarily going to be the best thing for them. It might be a really good opportunity just to say have two or three days off, especially when you're that close to Europe and they can all just go wherever they want so easily. 3 days off for in Australia, we barely get to Europe and back.
with the team then, obviously, Twine's going to come out of that starting 11, potentially Connolly as well. I'd suppose just thinking about it in terms of options, you know, having scored against Birmingham, do you potentially look at giving a Lukilo a start? Or I'm struggling to think what other options we really have at the moment to bring in for a Twine. Like if Connolly's out, Sharp starts up top. Yeah. Perhaps it's a Vaughan comes in. Otherwise, you're probably looking at Lukilo.
Not really sure about that. Yeah, probably. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, Vaughn or Lekilo are probably the options, because I mean it's hard to say, but I don't really know. I can't. We can't, just it's hard to say whether see whether at like how Ali performed this morning to see whether he's earned himself another chance or whether this was just a stay of execution because of some unfortunate circumstances. But yeah, I think it'll be, yeah, you'd imagine it's close to the last, the Norwich games. I'd be thinking Jacob, Greaves, Jones, Coyle, Morton, Slater, Carvalho, yeah, Tufan, Sharp, and then, yeah, if Connolly's there, then Connolly, and if not,
true,
then,
yeah, you could start both Connolly and Sharp, actually. That's a fair point.
Well, I guess, yeah, that's true. If Connolly's there, maybe we don't start Sharp. But then also, I mean, it's just one of those. You go, well, guys who have, you've got Sellers, Fleming, Vaughan, all those guys who have had good efforts in the Cup who are going to come onto the bench. I guess it depends. I mean, like, obviously, Sharp's really needed the minutes that he's got. But it is a lot of minutes to throw into some old legs who has not played a lot of football.
You don't, and you don't. Last thing you need is him pinging a hamstring or something.
Yeah. So, I guess it'll be. I mean, they'll. I think you're probably right. Probably one of Sharp or Connolly is probably the smart play, which leaves probably Lekilo coming in on the right hand side. I think seeing as it's that right sort of wing that, although, yeah, I don't know. Because then I'm like, but then Tufan sometimes goes on that side. Like, he seems to go either side. Like, he floats around and goes left or right or whatever. So, if it was, I don't know, Vaughan and Tufan and then Sharp or Connolly in the middle. That's what I'm going to say.
Fair enough.
After all the roundabout
stuff. And then the score prediction? I'll go 1-1, I think.
I was thinking a draw, but I can't decide whether I want to go 1-1 or 0-0. If I go 1-1, I'm thinking...
I don't think we're keeping a clean sheet, are we?
Yeah. Look, who knows? Stranger things have happened. That could be exactly also what we just really desperately do need to keep a clean sheet. It's been a while since we've had one of those as well. So I could see an eternally frustrating 0-0 where we... somehow managed to stop them from scoring, but we also create like 50 chances and don't score any of them.
Yeah, in fairness, the last time we played them, it was sort of looking destined for a 0-0 before Clark popped up, so maybe it will go that way this time. But look, yeah, we've got that as a nice Saturday morning game. I'm liking these Saturday morning games. I know they're not great for the travelling fans over in the UK, but it's nicer to start your Saturday morning with the game. Although that being said, the last few that we've lost have probably not put me in the best of moods for the weekend, but it's certainly nicer than a 2 a.m. wake up on a Sunday morning, that's for sure. But look, we'll see how that one goes. Of course, as we've said, there's no game next weekend, so what we'll probably try and do is another one of our flashback episodes where we're up to the Marco Silva lone army spell of that 16-17 season, which is, as I was saying before we went to air, almost exactly 7 years ago, which is a frightening thought that was so long ago. And then we'll be back the following week to do a review of the Sunderland game and preview Millwall. So until then, thanks for joining me, Dan.
No worries. I'll probably see you next week.
No worries. And thanks to everyone for listening in. Until next time, come on, City.
You've been listening to the official Hull City Australia podcast, The Tigers Down Under. For more discussion, join us on Facebook at the Hull City AFC Australia Facebook group, or follow us on Twitter at Hull City AFC Oz. The music was created by Amber Black. All the city's on fire, with a burning desire. Tigers are roaring, a destiny's calling, cause now is the time. Yeah, the city's on fire. Going higher and higher. There's no turning back 'cause you're out.